You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry.
Welcome to another episode, folks. Is it too early to say the C word? If you're me, yes, I'm a Grinch when it comes to Christmas. It just makes me narky and stressed. And I went to my daughter's harvest festival this morning and got really grumpy because they did the 12 days of Christmas as a harvest song. So on the first day of Christmas, blah, 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 the farmer gave to me.
Oh my goodness.
And so now I'm singing Christmas songs and it's making me really grumpy. Alison, tell me, are you a Christmas grump?
I am a Christmas fan, Wendy. My birthday's on Christmas Day, so I've kind of got to be a Christmas fan.
Is it?
It is. It's a, yeah. It's, and I know that the husband of our guest has a Christmas birthday too on the 23rd of December. So I've got a feeling that she's going to be a bit of a Christmas fan too. Shall we find out?
Shall I just Grinch off on my own in the corner?
Do you know what? A couple of weeks ago, you were telling us that you hate pantomime. And I think that we've actually got to the bottom of it, Wendy. You just hate Christmas.
I do, actually. But I don't tell my kids because I just do it all. I fake it all for them. Tell us who we've got. Let me stop being a Marty back old cow back and talk about our guest.
So we are joined today by our returning guest, the wonderful Izzy Judd, mum of three, musician, author, mindfulness fan, and wife to the lovely Harry Judd from McFly. Izzy recently released her first single and has her debut EP, Moments, coming out in 2024, with each song recalling a poignant moment in her life. Welcome to the podcast, Izzy.
Oh, I love the introduction, and listening to you talk about Christmas, I was just itching to get in on the chat about Christmas, because in theory I should really like Christmas, because our wedding anniversary is the 21st of December, and then Harry's birthday is the 23rd, and then obviously Christmas is the 25th, which is actually a lot of like gifts to think about and events over a short period of time.
And stress, see?
Yeah.
It's not just me.
You see, as a kid, as I loved Christmas. I mean, it was just my parents did such a great job at Christmas. Like, my brothers were choristers at King's in Cambridge. So I was really lucky. I used to go to the chapel at King's, which is absolutely breathtaking, and listening to carols there. So trying to keep up with that kind of Christmas moment. And then when you're a mum, it's just not relaxing.
It's not relaxing.
Not. The joy of everything.
And the pressure of trying to get it is just all too much. And then throw in COVID for however many years, and it's just like, oh my goodness. So this year, we're going to Harry's parents, which is when I really feel like I'm just...
There's a wonderful woman. I'm sure you Instagram ladies know her. She does something called Polar Post.
Yes.
And yeah, she is how I want to be about Christmas. Like, she is just an elf, and she does all these marvellous Christmas things that I watch her wistfully and think, nah, not me. Can't do it.
No. And I mean, I love choosing unique gifts, and I think it's a brilliant time of year to hunt down small businesses and find things that are really quirky and unique. I am somebody that will start looking now and start kind of writing notes when I see things crop up. And that's the great thing about Instagram, right? When you get shown all these brilliant, like, unique small business ideas. So I do try and do my bit there and not leave it to the last minute. And that I do enjoy. And I enjoy wrapping and I enjoy the preparing. It's just the actual day.
You mentioned Instagram, but the bad thing about Instagram around about Christmas is that you just feel like everyone else is having this dreamy, idyllic Christmas. And you've got kids that are kind of losing their rag because they're tired from school and exhausted. And it just feels like you're never measuring up.
But I suppose that's always the reality versus what we see on the grid, isn't it? I mean, we'd all rather post a nice picture than the reality. But I don't know. I hope my love for Christmas, the actual Christmas day, comes back again someday soon.
Now, I'm going to lower the tone always. The last time, Izzy, that you were on the pod was possibly my all-time podcast highlight. And you probably don't remember why, because this is just an everyday occurrence for you. But your lovely husband came sauntering in out of the shower trying to find a towel. And I was like, hello, Harry. Can you arrange a repeat performance just to cheer me up today, please?
I know. Well, I can't, sadly, because he's not here. He's doing a photo shoot today with his lovely mum.
I'm loving watching him and his mum. It's so sweet.
Yeah. I mean, what you see with Emma, if you are watching Race Across the World, is totally what you get. And I really lucked out with my mother-in-law. I'm sorry, I can't repeat the...
Should we just wrap it up there then, Wendy? Should we just go?
Yeah, right, let's go. No, go on. Ask her a question.
Oh, Izzy.
Might as well. Sorry, Izzy, we're joking.
So you've got your debut EP coming out, haven't you? And we wanted to take you all the way back to your musical roots because you played violin on the 2005 McFly tour, didn't you? How did that come about and what was it like performing in front of such massive audiences?
Yeah, so I met Harry. I was booked as a violinist to go on the Wonderland tour. And there were quite a few sliding door moments for that tour that meant I may not have done it. At the time, I was in an electric crossover group called Wild, which was managed by the same guy who did Vanessa May and Bond. And we were doing quite a lot of corporate gigs internationally, and we'd record an album. And I kind of had to ask permission to do this tour. And initially he said no. And then eventually he agreed. So there was my fate to meet Harry. So I turn up, it's the rehearsals, it's in Bristol, and I'd gone through quite a rough summer. I'd lost my grandmother, who I was really, really close to. I'd gone through a really horrible breakup. It was just one of those moments where I was really looking forward to just escape on tour with some friends and get away from all that stuff. And so I met Harry on the first day, and honestly, it was like I had known him. It was this weird, weird thing. And the boys are all really, really friendly, and they all came over and introduced themselves. And there was just something about Harry that was just this instant kind of, I really, really fancy you, but this is weird because I'm not in that headspace at all. Also, you're younger than me. You're in a band. What am I thinking? This is a professional job. I should not be crossing these boundaries. Anyway, then woke up the next morning with a huge cheek.
Oh, no.
And I had mumps. So I was then the girl on tour that had mumps, which is incredibly...
Not very sexy.
I couldn't... Not very sexy. And I had to come off the tour. So I then was off the tour for 2 weeks, was quite poorly, and then eventually got back on the tour. And I suppose when you ask about performing, I'd done my fair share of doing my own kind of stuff on the violin. So being in front of crowd, I mean, obviously they have huge crowds, but I was so like fixated with Harry. I just used to watch him play whilst I was in the backing orchestra, and by the end of the tour we got together.
So was it like the stuff of teenage dreams, like, or did you play it cool?
Yeah.
Or were you just totally not cool?
No, so in hindsight we've worked out that we used to like walk around the venue hoping that we might bump into each other.
It's
really
cute.
Like primary school, like, and but because our manager, so the people that were looking after us, and the boys' manager were very aware that there was distraction, we had to be really careful. So we like were kept quite separate. But there was a ferry trip from, I think the boys were playing, can't remember where now, Anyway, we had to go on a ferry. And actually, I think it was over to Ireland we did that. And we actually spoke on the ferry. And then it was on the very last night that Harry kind of plucked up the courage to come and we both plucked up the courage to actually talk. But absolutely, it was like a primary school thing. And the thing is, I don't know about you, but my daughter's turning 8. All of a sudden, there's this boy at school. And they're like, wow. There's like love notes and all sorts. So innocent and gorgeous and sweet. But I heard Harry say, right, we're gonna have to meet this boy.
That's so cute.
That's so dad. My husband wants to build, he's genuinely serious. I've got 2 daughters, Izzy, and he wants to build a bunker in the garden that he can sit at the front of with his shotgun when there's boyfriend.
That's quite extreme. Oh my goodness. But fast forward a few years, Izzy, and obviously you're a mum of 3, but it has been a bit of a bumpy road for you guys, hasn't it? What do you think you've learned about yourself through all of the fertility struggles that you guys have experienced?
I think the biggest thing really was the not being in control, and in a world and a place now where we get things with the, you know, click of a button and things just happen, when we struggled to start a family, it was the realization of having to let go of control and sort of breathe into the process, however difficult it was. And we went through a really difficult time, which I've spoken about lots before. But it's interesting going then into kind of being a mum, having gone through that, you realise actually you don't have control of lots of things when you have children. You know, they are going to test you in every possible way.
Yes.
So in many ways, I feel like what I learnt, patience, letting go, were really key things to know and understand now that I am a mum.
And how did those kind of tricky years influence how you are as a mum, do you think?
It's interesting. I think regardless of how Lola was conceived, I believe I would still be the same mother. I think as a person, I am classic, that duck that's sort of, I'm the one pedalling underneath, paddling. And Lola was very sort of serenely floating along the top. And I'm a natural, like a worrier. And so I think I never viewed Lola any differently, you know, to my boys. I don't see it as any different. But it has been said to me, you know, by people close to me, oh, she's very precious. And I'm like, well, all children are very precious. All of my children are precious, you know, so I don't believe personally that I have been any different because of the way we got to having children.
Yeah. And you've spoken in the past about how, you know, your health and disordered eating affected your fertility. What things are you doing now to keep your health in check?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting hindsight, and I think I have talked about disordered eating. I feel quite able to talk about most things quite easily, but disordered eating I found quite difficult to open up about. But the reason I wanted to talk about it is because I think it must be such a common thing within people that have fertility struggles. So I basically, after I had Kit, lost a lot of weight. And after going through fertility treatment and having felt quite very uncomfortable within my body, not just physically, but also the fact that I felt my body wasn't doing as it should and wasn't working, my language with my body was very, very negative.
But that's understandable, so, I think.
Yeah, totally. But I think I I became very hooked on health, because also when you are diagnosed, I have polycystic ovaries, a lot of the things that was taught to me about treating them was very health driven, you know, eating these certain foods, doing this exercise, you know, and so it was drummed into me that that's what I needed to do in order to conceive. But ironically, I think that that was the problem for me. My body was in fight or flight. It has been forever. I've always had anxiety. I don't believe that my body felt safe to reproduce. And what it needed was fuel. It needed food and energy and happiness and safety and all those things, rather than trying to control it by not giving my body
rather what than it the restrictions
to feel safe. Exactly. So now I have to be very, very careful. I think disordered eating goes hand in hand with anxiety. It's a form of control. And my biggest motivation really is to be a role model to my children. And so eating well and exercising, but having a healthy lifestyle is balance. And so therefore overall well-being is really important to me for my family. And that's my motivation to keep it in check and to talk about food in a positive way. Because I think I'm of a generation where we grew up with our parents or my
permanently
on a diet, trying out a different diet. And it was all that was, I can remember, this diet, that diet, trying this one, trying that one. And that's not her fault. That's totally generational.
It was the same in my house, definitely.
It was the 80s and 90s, wasn't it?
Yeah. And so that feeds through. So now I feel it's, you know, our responsibility to talk about it in a different
and
way.
And do you feel the same about mental health and anxiety? You talk very openly about it and about your struggles with anxiety in the past. And I remember when I was suffering with postnatal depression, I was watching stories that you were putting up, and it was so helpful to have to see other people just talking about anxiety and talking about children can be anxiety making little people. They're just, you're either worrying about whether they're okay or worrying about whether you've done something right or wrong. And do you feel like talking about it is important?
I think talking about mental health is really important generally. I think it should be discussed just in the same way as physical health, and looking after our mental health is just as important. And there were definitely things, I think, for me growing up, I would have benefited from. And so seeing little traits of myself in my children, I have been really keen to learn tools to then help them, things that I think would have helped me. For Kit, actually, a lot of it is breathing, like slowing him down. Music's a big one for Kit. And for Lola, she needs lots of explanation. So I think sometimes we just expect them to know, and she needs detail. And I was just like that. I needed detail. I needed to know exactly what was happening. Otherwise, I would get quite anxious. So mindfulness has been a kind of an anchor that I've used, and I love using it with the children, and hope that it gives them support with their mental health.
Yeah, I have to say, I found your book, Mindfulness for Mums, so helpful. And I think that it's partly from reading that book and talking to you in the past, I have made a real effort to try and, so if I'm doing breathing, so if I'm having a bit of a kind of moment and I take a few deep breaths, if my little ones come up to me and say, what are you doing, mummy? I will tell them. Whereas before I might have hidden it a bit and been like, oh, nothing, nothing, and felt a bit silly about it. And just trying, so then when they feel angry or frustrated about something, encouraging them to breathe through it as well. So it's important, isn't it, that we pass this stuff on to our kids.
And they're such little copycats, really. And I find it amazing, Lockie, who's two, because when we get in the car sometimes for the school run, and it's been somewhat stressful leaving the house, We take five, which is the where you spread your palm of your hand and you trace round this, your hand, breathing in and out. And you take five deep breaths. Hard to explain on a podcast, but it's called Take Five. And we do it when we get in the car. And the children actually ask if we can do it. And Lockie, he's so funny. He just goes, he's two and he finds it so funny. But and then of course Lola and Kit laugh and all the rest of it. So, but it's interesting Harry's take on it, because I'm always doing all these things, and as time's gone on, he's realised, you know, that how effective it is. But he read this. You know how dads come in and rile the children up before bed? Oh,
always.
Harry loves to send me like things he's read and seen. And recently there was this thing about how getting your children hyped up and laughing and all the rest of it before bed is really good because it releases.
I saw that too. I must have read the same thing.
So now he's just like, no, I'm doing good for their endorphins, and this is the right thing for them.
And you're like, oh,
I am the worst. At that time of day, you see the worst of me, because I'm hungry, yeah, and I'm tired. And that is when I have to dig really deep.
A lot of deep breaths.
Yes, yes.
Now, last time you were on the pod, you were like this pregnant with Lockie. You were super pregnant, and you were talking about, I remember you saying that Lola had been like the straightforward baby who'd slept, and then Kit had been more of a challenge because he'd had reflux. And I remember we had the reflux chat at length, and you were hoping that Lockie was coming out more Lola than Kit, and I don't know which one happened, so yeah. Please do tell me.
So I think Lockie is a real mix. I think I've got a bit of both in him. He has so much energy, though. Like, he is a dog. I might as well get a dog. I often think, because he just, the minute he's up in the morning, he's like, let me out, let me walk, let me eat. Like, ugh. He has an insane sort of need for getting out. And whereas, you know, with Lola, I remember I could just stay in and kind of, like, get some toys out and she'd be quite content. It would give me a bit of time anyway before we needed to leave the house. But he's been, I've worked hard at sleeping. I am a bit of, I need routine. And the only way it was going to work with Lockie was to get him in a routine as quickly as possible, because it was the only way I was going to cope with three. And it's so interesting how you approach it with your third versus your first. Because you're listening out for absolutely everything. Whereas with Lockie, I'm like, oh, he's crying. Oh, I'm in the middle of this homework or something. And then I'm like, yeah, exactly. But recently he did have an awful sleep regression. And it just reminds you, I mean, when you're lacking sleep, the sleep deprivation is just brutal. And then I wasn't getting the same nap in the day. And I really rely on that for my work. That's when I get things done. And so that kind of caused me a bit of like, oh my goodness, I really need you to nap. You're too young.
Dropping naps is the worst thing.
Yeah.
But we seem to be in going back in the right direction. So I think it was a regression.
That's a relief. At least with you having three, you've been through it. You know that it's not a case of, oh, this is it. He's going to be a terrible sleeper forever.
Yes, exactly. And it's also going, we're falling into a habit here, and he's having me on a bit.
Exactly. So I'm fascinated by how different families juggle everything and, you know, sharing the load and fitting in family time with work. And you mentioned that you rely on naps to get your work done. But how do you do it when Harry's away for blocks of time? So he's touring, he's doing TV projects like Celebrity Race Against the World. How do you make it work?
Well, Race Across the World was so intense because I didn't know where he was, couldn't phone him. So if you imagine, you don't realise how often you go to the phone to speak to them about something. reassurance on whether you've made the right decision with one of the, something to do with the kids, or we had a leak in our house, and you know, so there were these things where you just go, I can't pick up the phone, and I've got to actually make these decisions. It was quite a, it's not that I can't make the decisions, I'm just so used to being kind of co with Harry that it was this real, my goodness, kind of feeling. Whereas he's about to go on tour, so at least I know where he is and I know I can call him. But I do find it difficult, and I do have to just be really mindful during those periods not to take too much on, just not to say yes to too much. The kids come first, and I kind of have to just, yeah, just be really careful about what I'm taking on and what I am capable of, like what I'm actually have capacity to do.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So this EP that you're releasing in February next year, is this you getting back to the crux of who you are? Is this you rediscovering yourself and, you know, what you love and being Izzy again after years of being Mummy?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all had that moment where we've just felt completely lost into being a mum, and suddenly, like, even going out without a buggy, without a baby,
yeah, but where do you
yourself? It feels weird, doesn't it?
Seriously, the first time I went out without a buggy, I was like, oh, I've got to carry all this shit. I was like, you know, because often that you're not in with a buggy, but you're still nappies. What do you do with it all?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It's sorry, true. You're having a nice serious answer and I'm wanging on about nappies. Carry on.
No, but it's true. It's that weird, it's one of those firsts again, isn't it? But I met Harry on tour, right? And I have a background as a musician. I grew up into a musical family. Music's been absolutely my heart and soul since I was so little and been in my family and my life. And I met Harry, and Instagram was relatively new, and I built up a community on there. Obviously, you know, there was an interest being married to Harry, but also my conversations about fertility and mindfulness and motherhood, and it put me in on a different path that was never an intentional decision. It naturally happened, and I found it incredibly supportive going through these years of being a mum. And if I ever, you know, have, you know, talk about something that's happening and then you get people saying me too, it's the most comforting, reassuring space. And inevitably alongside that, I've worked on Instagram, and that's something we're all new to. It's very, very much new to this generation, the whole question of should my children be on Instagram? My goodness me, how many times have I had that conversation in my head with Harry? But, you know, I think it has enabled me to talk about things I really care about. It's helped me feel supported. And I love the creativity of it. I love getting a concept in from a brand, creating an idea around it, put it all together. I edit it. I do the whole thing, and I really love the whole creativity of it. However, it doesn't need me much space now because I'm trying to figure out the kids as well to do the things I love as well. And when I really love Instagram, it's when there is something alongside the work side. I hope this is making sense. Alongside that still fills my cup and gives back to the community something for them, because I really appreciate and I'm really grateful to the people that have supported me and stuck with me. And so being able to play my violin has just been best way to reconnect, because that's really where I'm from, that's really who I am, and that is my happiest place. And so the first single, Stay Awake, which is out at the moment, was the one that was most requested when I asked people which was their favourite lullaby, what was their favourite piece of music that they had growing up or they played to their kids. And so I wanted to record it as a thank you, really. But everybody that, through the years on Instagram, has been loyal and supportive and kind of walked on my mum path with me. And so I'm excited to release more and share more music and also hopefully inspire kids, you know, to actually see someone playing a musical instrument and having music in their life and, you know, maybe inspire some children to pick up an instrument or practice or, you know, so all those sides of it as well. So it feels very, I feel very at peace with it, and I don't feel any sort of pressure around it. I just want to share some music. And that feels really lovely.
I have two more questions actually for you about the EP. Because first of all, when you were on last time, I don't know if you remember, but we were saying how all lullaby albums are absolute tosh and that you should release one. And now G has gone and released a sleep album. So she's nicked my idea for you. And she's done it.
Yeah, she got in there first.
With all her spare time. How that woman does it all, I will never know.
I know, bless her. But she wrote me such a lovely message just saying how pleased she was, like happy she was for me to be playing. And music for both G and I has been really important, you know, and so I think it's lovely that if we can give that to babies and children.
And I wanted to ask you about the track with your brother, Rupert. My brother is also, my brother's got cerebral palsy. And so for me, I was a bit like listening to the one with your brother because it's just so special, isn't it?
I'm 40 in February and I feel like I'm going through real transitions. And one of my things is Rupert. And so he suffered a really serious head injury in 1997 when I was 12, and he's brain damaged, but he can still play the French horn. And, you know, for the last 8 years, 10 years since I started trying for a family and then having children, I haven't been able to mentally give enough time to Rupert. It's so painful in many ways. And then having a child that is very like him is quite triggering. And it's almost just so sad that you go there. It's just, and for many years, I think, you know, from having my kids, I've sort of pushed it down. And I feel now it's bubbling, it's coming back. And one of the main reasons for that is because Rupert's memory is decreasing, and suddenly that feeling of, oh my goodness, you feel like when, because he had that awful accident, that he's now going to live forever. It's like there's like he's had his awful thing. He's not going to go again. And so now I feel like actually my time with him is precious. So I wanted to get him into the studio and I wanted to record some music with him. And it was honestly the thing that was so gorgeous about it. So Somewhere in My Memory, which is the next single that's coming out, he played on our wedding day.
Oh, and, wow.
But when we were in the studio, I realised, so, you know, it's quite, I guess in the studio, to try and recreate a sort of an atmosphere that feels like you're performing a piece versus this kind of sterile, because obviously you've got headphones and you've got to record it. But what Rupert needed was for me to move my body, like feel the music he was doing in order for him to express himself. So if I sat still, he wanted my attention. So he needed that involvement from me. And it will just be a memory that will just stick with me. We kind of move together to kind of get him to feel this emotion. He does anyway. It was just really, really special. And I can't wait to give him that moment.
You shared a reel of him actually at one of McFly's concerts over the summer. And again, I was just super moved by how unconsciously he was just adoring every single minute of that. And I love the fact that he was just loving it and showing how much he was loving it. It was gorgeous.
Yeah. And music is in his bones. I mean, it's everything in him. And it always has been and always was. And so it is miraculous that that part of the brain wasn't damaged. And also that that part of his face, you know, in order to play the French horn, you need your jaw or your mouth. And that's the only part he doesn't have metal plates from the reconstruction of the accident. So thank goodness he has the ability to still play.
Yeah, well, it's beautiful. The song that you have created is just such an amazing piece of music. So well done there. Something that I want to ask you about, Izzy, is winter coughs and colds, because as a mum of three, I'm guessing, similar to me, it's, you know, and Wendy, it's that time of year when it's just everywhere. There's no escaping it. How do you keep on top of making sure that all of your kids are healthy and not just coming down with allergy left, right and centre?
Yeah. So Harry and Kit are the coughers. Like, they are the ones that keep us up at night coughing, whereas Lola and I are slightly more into our sore throats. So we'll wait and see what Lockie comes up with.
It's funny, actually. You're right. They all have an Achilles heel, don't they? One of mine gets croup. One of them gets tonsillitis. All of us have got a bug thing that we go to.
A niche.
A snot niche.
But we try to stay on top of our well-being. I've worked recently with a lovely brand called Zarbee's, and they have an immune support that tastes so delicious. And actually, I pour it onto the cereal. So it's like a honey. So it's all like scientifically proven, but they use naturally sourced ingredients, which I love. I love to find something which is as close to natural. And yes, they have a lovely immune support, and they have a really nice evening immune support, which I love. I take it when I'm having my bath. And then they also have the cough and sore throat syrup for kids and adults, which helps the cough tick and the throat tick. And it's just easy. When there's something in the cabinet which just sort of does more than one job,
do you get the dread, though? Like, one of mine is ill at the moment, and it's like someone turned a little snot tap on at the top of her head, and she's just like, ugh. And I'm sat there and I'm just like, who's next? Which one of the three of us? And I'm like, don't kiss me. I love you, but don't kiss me.
I know. And also, what I find with it, all of you get it, but just slightly in a different way. So it's like, I'm like, oh, I feel a bit coldy. And then, like, Harry's basically got the flu, obviously, because he's a man. And, and then Lola's just my little hero. She would go to school with a temperature. She is such a toughness.
Bless her.
It's that time of year. It's just that time of year. And with the sudden temperature drop as well.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but my kit, just wearing clothes, is just not fun. So I just every day I'm like, oh my God. So I now layer him up from the bottom up. So I get vest, long sleeve, polo shirt. So he'll do that, but he doesn't like the jumper, then the coat, and he feels all restricted. So I try and base layer up with him.
I quite like the idea of him with a little old man's vest on there. That's quite cute.
Yeah, exactly. Little vest.
So you mentioned that it's your 40th next year and you've got your EP coming out. So what plans have you got to celebrate?
So actually, I should ask you guys about this. So Harry's mum has very kindly offered to have the children and for Harry and I to actually go away, which would be
nice.
The first time we've been abroad on holiday ourselves, like not for a work purpose or just the two of us, obviously since having the children. But I'm like, oh God, should I go? You know, yes. The guilt sets in.
No, go. Yeah. They won't miss you. They won't notice you're gone. It will be marvellous. Go. And I know exactly where you should go, but I will tell you off of the podcast.
I've got a suggestion too, actually. There are some hotels and cruises, I don't know how you feel about cruises, that are adult only, which isn't for everyone. And whenever I hear it, I always feel a bit like, oh, is it going to be a bit pervy?
It just makes
a bit kind of like adult
only.
Yeah,
Pampas Glass is all I think when you say it.
It's not abroad, but there's an amazing hotel down in Cornwall called the Scarlet Hotel, and it is adult only, and it is just idyllic. There's a spa, it is beautiful.
And it has seaweed hot tubs on the coast.
Seaweed hot tubs, and you can look out onto the sea. It is nice. And then also, I've seen adverts for Virgin Voyages cruises, and they're adult only too. And I think they look like fun because there's no kids running around being noisy. You just enjoy each other's company.
If you're going without the kids, you don't want to then be around kids thinking, I wish our kids were here or not here.
Exactly. Exactly. Look, we shouldn't be endorsing all these places.
No, other places are available.
The good thing about being married to Harry, of which there are many, I will say, but one of the good things about being married to Harry is that we both have the same idea of a holiday, which is basically fly and flop. And we both love a spa. But even though you'd be, because he's, as you've probably seen on Race Across the World, he's so, like, he's on the go, Harry. You know, he's like, but it's so, you would think maybe he'd want to be doing things, but actually we're both quite on the same page when it comes to holidays. So that's good.
That's good.
Into the same thing.
Well, whatever you do for your 40th, I hope you have a wonderful time.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us again on the podcast. Dare you not have your semi-naked husband in the background with you on the podcast.
No, I know. How dare I?
No, I'm only joking. Although, it's lovely to have you on, Izzy.
He is going to be semi-naked on tour. I think he's drumming with his top off, which he disclosed to me the other day. It's like,
so everyone buy your tickets now for the McFly tour.
I think it's because he genuinely just gets really hot drumming. So he's like,
is it really weird having people kind of like lusting after your husband? Or are you just so used to it now that you don't really notice?
I mean, I look back to the trippy days. I'm grateful that social media wasn't so big then. I think if someone has just always, he's always been in a band or he's always done stuff on TV, it is just part and parcel. I think he gets annoyed that I'm not more like, you've got your top off.
Well, you see it every day, don't you?
Yeah.
It gets a bit boring.
Whatever. Oh, thank you so much, Izzy, for joining us. It's been so wonderful to chat to you.
You too. Thanks so much.